This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
It's the final Winnipeg Jets game day of the season, Santa Lucia Pizza game day. The Winnipeg Jets versus the Arizona Coyotes, 9 o'clock tonight, live from Arizona. We'll have the call. Basically, let's go over the situation right now with the Winnipeg Jets. The Winnipeg Jets currently sit at 97 points. Mm-hmm. If the Jets win and Nashville ties, Winnipeg will have the tiebreaker. If the Nashville Predators win tonight, Dave, they finish in first.
Correct.
Nobody can catch them. If the St. Louis Blues and the Nashville Predators tie, so a combination of Nashville not picking up any points, and they play Chicago, St. Louis will finish ahead of Nashville because they have the tiebreaker. They have the same amount of regulation wins, but the Blues have the season series against the Nashville Predators. If the Jets finish tied with the Predators, they will have the tiebreaker. So obviously that would mean that Nashville doesn't pick up any points today. The Jets pick up at least a point, and they will finish first in the Central Division. So the only situation where St. Louis finishes first is if Nashville doesn't pick up any points, or St. Louis picks up a win and Nashville also picks up 1 point, then they would both finish with 99 points. They'd have the tiebreaker. And Winnipeg would also have to
lose.
Only, right. They don't win, and then St. Louis finishes first. So it's completely up in the air right now, which is pretty exciting in the last game of the regular season. As I mentioned, it's Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day. We're going to be joined by Brian Munns, Winnipeg Jets color analyst, at 9:30. We're going to be joined by Catherine Silverman of The Athletic Arizona at 10 o'clock to preview the Jets and Coyotes game. At 10:30, we're going to be joined by Michael Trakos of Post Media. 11 o'clock, we're going to be joined by former NHLer Colby Cohen. He does analysis for ESPN. We're going to talk about the Frozen Four. That's coming up starting next Thursday, live from Buffalo. And then at 11:30, we're going to talk to Cam Robinson. We're going to do a bit of a playoff preview, fantasy playoff preview with Cam. He covers the world of hockey, fantasy hockey, and hockey prospects for Dauber Hockey and Dauber Prospects. We're also going to talk a little bit about the 2019 draft, and it's starting to look a little bit more like Kaapo Kakko might give Jack Hughes a run for his money for that first spot. Most scouts still have Jack Hughes as the number one prospect heading into the 2019 NHL draft, but Kaapo Kakko has closed the gap. Some scouts might even say that he is the number one pick for the 2019 NHL draft. But Dave, I want to go back to Thursday night against the Colorado Avalanche. The Jets are up 2-0 after the first period. The shots were 19-14 for the Jets. It looked like the Jets were well on their way to winning that game, and then we all know what happened. The Jets end up losing in overtime. Eric Johnson, who has scored against the Jets in overtime before, he takes that extra point away from the Jets. And as we talked about, now the Jets are sitting here with one game left, 1 point behind the Nashville Predators, and they don't control their own destiny. Now the Predators control the Jets' destiny.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's not an ideal position to be in, considering where the Jets have been all season long for the most part. So rather unfortunate, but you know, it's kind of part of the, not malaise, but basically what's been surrounding this team, because right now there's been a funk around this team that, you know, whether it's, you know, what's going on off the ice and all the, you know, supposed drama. And then you've got the on ice. They're not having the results they want. They're in a bit of a slide, 4-5-1 in their last 10 games. And we talked about it last week, how, you know, the last 8 Stanley Cup champions, the record hasn't been uniform. But, you know, like, whereas you have some teams that are hot, like the Capitals last year were 8-2. But you've had other teams there. I think there's only been one team that had a losing record. I think it was the Blackhawks. But in 2013. But other than that, I'm not so sure that there's been a lot of teams that have kind of limped in and been able to turn it on and just get it going again. Of course, you know, we've been talking about it a lot, and there's a lot of articles right now being written about what kind of impact Josh Morrissey can have on this team. And we talked about that, obviously, the last few weeks, about how important Josh Morrissey is for this team, how this team has done since Josh Morrissey has been out of the lineup. It has not been very good for Winnipeg. So, and obviously that also coincided with Dustin Byfuglien being out of the lineup. So you're missing two of your three best defenseman in my mind, and you know, that plays a big part. Now the question is, can Josh Morrissey seamlessly come into this lineup and have a significant impact? I mean, I think defensively you'll see a vast improvement when Josh Morrissey is in the lineup and sends these defensemen who are probably playing, or not probably, but are playing above where they should be, sends them down, and I think that's good. But I mean, again, you can't always just assume that your lineup is going to be the same throughout. So even if you get Josh Morrissey back, you could lose somebody else. So I mean, you have to go with the team as it's currently constructed, and and look at it that way. And right now, this Jets team is just not firing. And we saw a better effort for sure in Colorado, but it's a function of consistency, and that's what we've been talking about for a while now. It's, can you play a consistent 60-minute game, not just once, but can you do it throughout a course of 4 or 5 games? Now, we're not seeing that, obviously. Can the Jets, and you just went through a number of scenarios there, Ezzy, if the Jets end up playing Nashville in the first round, is that their best opponent, perhaps, because of the history, because the Jets get up for Nashville, because Nashville, like the Jets, although Nashville's a bit hotter right now, Nashville's 7-2-1 in their last 10 games, so they're playing pretty well right now, but can the Jets step up and get ramped up for a first-round series against Nashville? Yeah, probably, but I'm just saying it's just not ideal the way they're going into the playoffs.
Right, and the history between these two teams, last year's second round and what's happened between the Jets and the Predators, I think that's why you could make a strong argument that of the three teams that the Jets could possibly play, you could obviously, still get first in the Central Division, and then you get home ice for the first two rounds, so you want home ice. Mm-hmm. That's not in question. That means that you're going to play the Dallas Stars. But when you talk about, what team have the Jets had the most success against over the last couple of years, it's definitely the Predators, Dave, and I agree with you. And, it has to be mentioned because on Thursday night against the Avalanche, another lead is squandered, and, mm-hmm. We all know the numbers now. The Jets last year, 42-1-1 after two periods, and this year they're 25-5-4. So this year, 25 wins versus 42 wins. Obviously, last year they were in a position, just adding up the numbers. That's easy math. Even I can do that. I mean, the Jets were in a position that they were leading after two periods quite a lot more often last year. But when you're talking about, some of these leads that we have seen evaporate for the Jets, mm-hmm. We talked about the Islanders game. We talked about, the Minnesota Wild game
the San Jose game.
The San Jose game where Joe Pavelski scored with 4 seconds left in the game. I mean, we've seen that a lot here in the second half of the season. How concerned should you be? Because this week we had not only one, we had three team meetings for the Jets. One of them was after the game, that was a closed door player meeting, but the Jets have had two meetings. They've decided to cancel practice twice this week. Mike McIntyre, our good friend of the Winnipeg Free Press, he wrote about it in his column. Very uncommon to see that at this point in the year, Dave, especially when you have, so few opportunities to practice. So how much of a concern is this for the Jets? It's not just about, the specific leads. You mentioned, the San Jose game or the Colorado game. I mean, it's not just those specific games, but it seems like this team right now, you could say, maybe lacks a killer instinct.
Yeah, getting back to the idea of practice, my thought is, and I could be wrong, Coach Maurice has been talking about this idea of rest. And last year we saw in game 82, he sat Wheeler, he sat Morrissey. I can't remember if anybody else sat. The guys who would have played a full season, and instead he chose to sit him for that last game, give him an extra two, three days before before you have a three-day break before the playoffs started on Wednesday or Thursday of last season. But I think from my reading into it, because it's not just like Paul Maurice said this after the Monday or after the Tuesday game in Minnesota, so it looks like an excuse. He's been talking about the schedule and the need for rest. So I'm not terribly shocked that they canceled the practice to stay away. I mean, it's a twofold benefit. Number one, it keeps these guys a little fresher because they're saying that they're traveling and it's hard on them. So that's part of it. I think also though, it insulates them a little bit from the media, and they don't have to have conversations. They don't have to be prodded about, especially when after a team, has that closed door meeting. Obviously Blake Wheeler came out and talked about it. Paul Maurice came out and talked about it, but you want to kind of create that bubble, leave the guys away from it. You let the captain take the have to go out there and answer the questions, but you don't want the whole team having to have that sort of same discussion over and over and over again. So I'm not terribly surprised they did it, because I think that from his perspective, maybe because they've been playing, quote, a lot of hockey, that he wants them to stay fresher because they're not going to have, because he needs to ride his horses, because these games are important and they want to finish first in the division and have a chance to play either Dallas or Colorado. I think from their perspective, he's thinking, well, let's give these guys a little bit of rest because we're going to need them for the games. We'll get that win because we don't have an opportunity. We don't have the luxury to rest these guys.
Right. And, sticking on the topic of the rest, you wonder, how many players would be resting if the Jets were, mm-hmm. first in the division, and they really had nothing to play for. And that isn't the case right now. This game between the Jets and the Coyotes is huge. not so much for the Coyotes because they're knocked out of the playoffs. They were eliminated two nights ago. But when you're talking about, you know, the Coyotes, the Jets could have really helped the Coyotes out by beating the Avalanche. Mm-hmm. So the Coyotes are obviously going to play the role of spoiler. So this game is going to mean something in that sense. I don't think you're talking about the Ducks or the Kings last night where each team had actually nothing to play for. The Ducks are actually the only team whose season is already done. They're the only team that has played 82 games this season. All 30 other teams are in action tonight. So when you're talking about the Jets, this is absolutely huge because not only are you in danger of finishing second, you could actually finish third in mm-hmm. the division. I mean, it's unlikely, but you know, you have to pick up, you have to pick up at least a point,
right?
Because if St. Louis wins and the Jets pick up a point, St. Louis would finish higher than the Jets. But if the Jets,
if the Jets
finished with 98 points and St. Louis finished with 98 points, the Jets would have the tiebreaker.
That's right.
That's what I meant.
Yeah.
Blues pick up a point, then Jets pick up a point. So you really want to win so you don't have to worry about that scenario. As we talked about, the Jets don't have, you know, their fate in their hands when you talk about finishing first because it depends what Nashville does, mm-hmm. right? And Nashville, of course, is going to play before the Jets do. The Jets, as we mentioned, play the Coyotes tonight at 9 o'clock. You, of course, can hear that game here on TSN 1290. And getting back to, you know, this game, is that maybe a good thing for this team? Because, you know, we were on Wednesday, Shawnee and I were doing the NHL This Week show, and we were talking about, you know, the Jets and how they've struggled here down the stretch. And that win would have been huge if it happened against mm-hmm. the Colorado Avalanche, because you'd put yourself in a much more comfortable position, that extra point, right? Because you would have the tiebreaker. You'd be in first. But is it maybe a good thing that this last game of the season is going to have meaning because you know that, you know, you're heading into the playoffs playing games that mean something? Or is that something that you should have avoided, and that's not necessarily a good thing? Because I think we'd all agree, say whatever you want about the Jets' struggles, I mean, whoever they match up against in the first round, it's a completely new season. And I agree. I think the Jets would rather play Nashville than St. Louis. Mm-hmm. And I think you would probably rather play Dallas than Nashville, just because, you know, Dallas isn't a very good offensive team. They're a solid defensive team, and they've played well against the Jets this year. But, you know, is that a good thing that this last game is going to be, you know, for all the marbles, as they say?
Well, you know, and it's really interesting because St. Louis plays the Canucks this afternoon, and you've got Nashville playing 2 hours before against Chicago, then the Jets puck drop. So not that Winnipeg will for sure know their fate by the game, by puck drop in Arizona, but they'll have a pretty good idea. I mean, they'll see what the score is. It, you know, maybe they won't pay attention, but I suspect some will. And they'll have a pretty good idea as to whether Nashville is winning or losing, and or what their fate is going to be. And they'll know, obviously, what the end result of the St. Louis game. So I think it's a good thing, as I think that, you know, this is a team that, again, I don't think one game makes a season. So I don't think that this game is going to make or break or allow the Jets to leapfrog from this having a really good game into a playoff. But, you know, from a mentality standpoint, I think the Jets just need to, you know, again, you had a pretty good effort against Colorado. If you have that good effort and you have a good result against the Coyotes, at least there's some positivity that you can go into the end of the season with. You're going to have to talk to the media, not tomorrow because it's a travel day, but you're going to have to talk on Monday or Tuesday. And obviously, we're still going to find out what's happening with Brandon Tanev, because I think Coach Marie said that he'll reveal that on Monday or Tuesday. So we don't know what his status is, but I think from the mental standpoint, I think it's a huge game because, one, you need to show that the effort's going to be there. That, you know, it's one thing to say words and, you know, we have a meeting and da 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 da, and it was closed door and the media was held out for 23 minutes and the coaches and it was just the players, you know, hashing things out. But it's another thing to actually show that you have some actions behind those words. So to me, again, you had a pretty decent effort against Colorado. Obviously, you ultimately lost, but you need to have that good effort again. Keep that positivity going and then move it into the playoffs.
The Predators and Blackhawks play at 7 o'clock Central Time. Mm-hmm. And the St. Louis Blues, I believe, play at
2.
Is it
2
3?
O'clock?
3 o'clock.
3 o'clock, sorry.
3 o'clock.
Yeah.
The St. Louis Blues and the Vancouver Canucks play at 3 o'clock. So the result of that game will be known well before the Jets play mm-hmm. the Coyotes at 9 o'clock. So we're going to know whether or not, you know, the Jets are going to have to worry about the Blues. But one thing is for sure. The Winnipeg Jets need to win against the Arizona Coyotes tonight, especially if the St. Louis Blues pick up a win, because if the Blues pick up a win, they'll be 2 points ahead of the Jets, and then the Jets are going to need to win in order to finish ahead of St. Louis. And when it comes to Nashville, If Nashville wins, same scenario. The Jets can't catch Nashville if they win. If the Jets pick up a point, pardon me, if the Nashville Predators pick up a point and the Jets pick up a win, then the Jets would have the tiebreaker. Right. So at the end of the day, you know, we're going through all of these permutations, but the Jets have to take care of business, especially considering they didn't get a point, the extra point on Thursday night against the Avalanche. We're going to head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the new Jets forward combinations. There were some unfamiliar faces on the second line. You had Matty Perreault up there with Kevin Hayes and Nikolai Ehlers. Andrew Kopp was on the third line with Brian Little and Patrick Laine. And then the fourth line was Par Lindholm with Adam Lowry and Jack Roslovic. So Paul Maurice had the line blender out. And we're going to have to wait to see after morning skate today whether Paul Maurice is going to keep those lines together. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day on the home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Morrissey has the 4-on-4. Score! Morrissey with the shot. Adam Lowry with the tip. Lowry does a really nice job winning a very important faceoff in the offensive zone, but he goes right to the net. So the quick D to D from Morrissey, and he just throws it to an area. Look at the read tip. Wow. Under pressure. Great hand-eye coordination from Adam Lowry.
That was an Adam Lowry goal from back in October against the Arizona Coyotes. The Jets and the Coyotes have already met twice this year. Each team has a win. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. It's a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and Coyotes tonight at 9 o'clock. And if you're wondering why it's at 9 o'clock, and I was wondering, Arizona is in the Mountain Time Zone. But in Arizona, they don't subscribe to daylight savings.
They don't believe in it.
So after daylight savings, it actually becomes 2 hours behind Winnipeg.
They hate farmers in Arizona.
So if you're wondering why it's at 9 o'clock as opposed to 8 o'clock, exactly. They don't like farming in Arizona. We're kidding, of course. They support our fine folks in agriculture. This segment, we're going to talk about those new Jets line forward combinations. Also, guys, I want to talk about, I want to get Shawny Assor in here as well because, you know, there's a lot of discussion here in Winnipeg, in the media, and about specifically Dustin Byfuglien. And Buff is not on the top power play unit, and we know that Buff was very frustrated on Thursday night against Colorado because if you didn't watch the game, Jacob Trouba was on, I forget which exact power play it was. I think it was the second power play that the Jets had, if I'm not mistaken. It wasn't the first one, but I think it was the second period, Dave?
Yeah, I think it was the Kerfoot high-sticking.
The Kerfoot high-sticking penalty where Jacob Trouba was out there for the whole power play, the whole 2 minutes, and you could see Buff on the bench. He was visibly upset, and that's because he's on the second power play unit. He's usually on the first power play unit, but I want to get to these forward line combinations first because, you know, we saw Mark Scheifele score the goal in the first period against Colorado. Both goals were in the first period against Colorado, but that was the goal where it was challenged by the Colorado Avalanche. It was unsuccessfully challenged. And, you know, Scheifele was on his usual top line with Kyle Connor and Blake Wheeler. So, you know, Paul Maurice has been reticent to break that combo up, and we've seen Nikolai Ehlers on that top line. So no big surprise there, but it's on the second and third line, guys, where we started to see, you know, some unfamiliar faces. Matty Perreault, even though he's been on the second line before, hasn't been on the second line much this year, on the left side with Kevin Hayes in the middle, Nikolai Ehlers on the right side. And then you had the third line, to me, which was a real mishmash. Brian Little between Patrick Laine and Andrew Kopp. And, you know, to me, what's maybe the most confusing about that third line is that you've seen Brian Little as of late playing on the wing, right, with Adam Lowry and Brandon Tanev. And I get why Paul Maurice is shuffling the lines a little bit here, because Brandon Tanev's out of the lineup. So what are you going to do with Andrew Kopp? Well, he brings Andrew Kopp back onto the TLC line, which is, I guess, the LLC line now with Laine there.
Limited Liability Corporation?
Right. There you go. I like that. So I guess, you know, we talked about Scheifele. So he scores the goal in the first period. And then Nikolai Ehlers combined with Kevin Hayes and Matty Perreault for the Jets' second goal. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that second line, I think you could argue, was one of the Jets' best lines. Certainly, it was a strong game for Scheifele, Wheeler, and Connor. But the third line, I think we would all agree, they didn't do much offensively. The third line, as we mentioned, that was Kopp, Little, and Laine. So what did you think about those lines, Dave? Because let's forget about the first line, because I think we all expect Connor, Scheifele, and Wheeler to stay together. But when you're talking about Matty Perreault up on that second line and then Kopp on the wing with Patrick Laine, Brian Little in the middle of that third line, what did you think of that third line and what did you think of that second line?
Well, You know what? I don't know. I'm not really sure why Paul Maurice feels that Brian Little and Patrick Laine are a good combination. I'm not entirely sure why Andrew Kopp. I mean, I like Andrew Kopp, but I like Andrew Kopp more with Lowry and Lindholm than I do with, you know, I throw Roslovic with Little and Laine if you're going to do that combo. I mean, I get the idea of trying to mix it up a little bit, but I don't. I mean, it always comes kind of comes back to me to the whole Wheeler-Shifley thing, and would you be willing to move those guys around? I mean, Paul Maurice obviously isn't because he hasn't done it yet, so clearly he's not willing to do that move. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I know those guys probably like playing with Kyle Connor simply because of his speed, and he can keep up with them. And but to me, the Little Laine, I mean, I like Laine with Hayes. But and I like Perreault with anybody essentially. Kopp, I think, has really stepped up his game. But I don't know. I wasn't a huge fan of these lines. Like, they don't really make a ton of sense to me because you're not getting a complete effort from, or not that the effort is not there, but it just doesn't seem like these combinations seem to work. And I think it's a little bit disconcerting. Obviously, like you just touched on, as you lost Brandon Tanev, so that definitely impacts things. But I think at this point, when you're this point of the season, you're still, quote, trying to find that which will work. You know, it's disconcerting simply because it's very late to be doing that. This is a point where these guys should have been playing, you know, four or five games in a row with each other or more to really have that kind of, you know, muscle memory of playing together. And I think, to me, you know, and again, the only thing that runs counter to what I just said is simply the fact that you have to be able to account for injury because it's the NHL and guys get hurt. So obviously you have to be able to adapt, and that's not a bad thing. But I just think, like, you'd like to have a little bit more consistency. That's all I'm saying.
Right. And, you know, we mentioned the top line, Shifley, Wheeler, Connor. They actually generated 11 shots on goal and 17 shot attempts through two periods. So the top line was really good. And, you know, that's been a concern as of late. We know Mark Shifley, mm-hmm. you know, his goal scoring has been down over the last, you know, 8 or 9 games. Same thing goes for Blake Wheeler, even though you expect more of a playmaking ability out of Blake Wheeler. But when you're talking about, you know, Patrick Laine, you know, still one goal in his last 18 games. He was out there for 4 minutes of power play time, only had one shot on net. And he also hit the crossbar late.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think he's got 13 this season. Posts and crossbars.
Right. So, I mean, Laine, sure, he almost scored there late in the game, but I think you would agree that this line combination, playing with Brian Little and Andrew Kopp, didn't really get Laine going. And you almost wonder, has Paul Maurice moved Laine around too much? Like, the way I look at it, I mean, Matty Perreault's a great player, and we talked about the Jets' second goal. Matty Perreault, you know, it was a nice goal. He hooks up with Nikolaj Ehlers. I mean, we've seen Kevin Hayes between Nikolaj Ehlers. I think most people would agree that, you know, Hayes is going to be your second line center at this point. But I guess when you're talking about these line combinations, does this matter if Brandon Tanev is going to be healthy for game one against whoever the Jets are playing? Because clearly Paul Maurice had to do something with that third line. But I think what would make the most sense with that third line is if Adam Lowry stays as that third line center, and then you move Andrew Kopp up to the wing, even though he's done a nice job playing center. But you wonder why they didn't just move Andrew Kopp up to that line, and then maybe you have a line of Kopp, Lowry, and Roslovic. Maybe Little stays on that line. Like, why couldn't Paul Maurice just leave Brian Little with Adam Lowry? It was very peculiar to me. And again, maybe we're making something out of nothing here, right? Because if Brandon Tanev's healthy to go, you expect to see Brandon Tanev, Adam Lowry, Brian Little, and then maybe there's always the shot that, you know, there's going to be a TLC line reunion, Dave. But to me, it seems like Patrick Laine on that third line with Brian Little, I don't mind seeing that, but it the combination of Andrew Kopp, Brian Little, and Patrick Laine was the one that was really, kind of eye-scratching to me.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I looked at it and I was thought to myself, okay, well, we'll see what that is, but what is that exactly? And I don't know. I just didn't. I didn't think it didn't resonate with me. So I suspect it won't look the same. And we haven't, obviously, like you touched on the first segment, as there hasn't been a practice. So we'll see what happens at morning skate. That won't be till, I think, 1:30 p.m. our time. I think it's 11:30 Mountain. So it won't be for a few more hours, of course. So we won't know exactly what Paul Maurice is doing. I mean, in theory, they might not have to skate, but I suspect they'll skate this morning. So we'll see what happens.
Okay, boys, we're going to head to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Winnipeg Jets color analyst Brian Munns. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day on the home of the Jets and the Moose, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
9:32 in the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Manuk, producer Sean Asor. Maybe we should mention that Drew Mandel's away from the show again. Like, how many shows is this guy going to miss here?
I don't know. He's on permo vacation.
We're just joking. Drew Mandel will be back next Tuesday night. It's the NHL This Week playoff preview show. It's going to be myself, Drew Mandel, and Sean Asor. It's a three-hour show, 7 to 10. We're going to go series by series, team by team, getting you ready for the start of the 2019 Stanley Cup playoffs. I don't know about you guys, but I am ready for the playoffs. Like, I realize that, you know, the regular season end has come pretty quickly here. But, you know, these last couple of games, this last week here, like, I'm ready for the start of the first round of the playoffs. As far as I'm concerned, the best time in all of sports. You've got baseball that just started. You've got the first round of the playoffs. It's spring. Is there any better time of the season, guys?
No, and especially the first round. The first round of the playoffs is always my favorite. So,
all right, we got Brian Munns of TSN 1290 on the line. Let's hit the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Live from Arizona, where I obviously don't know what time it is Brian Munns of TSN 1290, Winnipeg Jets color analyst. Munzy, let's start off with, you know, tonight's game against the Coyotes. Obviously, you know, the Jets lose a point to the Avalanche in overtime there. Eric Johnson crushes some Jets dreams there. But in a sense, if the Jets win here, they're going to need some help. But is that what the focus has to be here, is just getting a clean 2 points and not letting this thing get to extra time?
Well, I think first and foremost, they're going to have an idea by the time they step on the ice at 9 o'clock Winnipeg time, 7 o'clock local here, as to kind of how things are starting to play out. Because 3 hours before, you've got the Canucks in St. Louis, and then 2 hours prior to game time, you've got the Predators and Blackhawks playing inside Bridgestone Arena. So the Blues game is going to be over, and the Predators game will be pretty much the midway point. Now, the Blackhawks are playing back-to-back, so kind of curious to see how they play on consecutive nights and knowing that their season comes to conclusion. So in all honesty, with that said, and we'll probably hear more from the players, I expect the words out of those involved's mouth here today when we get to the morning skate in about 4 hours from now, is all they can do is control their own destiny. All they can do is come out and play a hard game tonight against the Coyotes club that is playing in front of their fans that have been tremendous here in their playoff push for the final time, and they know that Arizona is going to give them everything they can handle. So I think from a Jets standpoint, with all the talk that's been around the team, with a little bit of, pressure and conviction, they can come out and play this game and just worry about their own game right now and not think about too much the other stuff that really you have no control over.
You know, Brian, with all the controversy surrounding the team, the closed door meeting after the game against the Wild, is there a positive that can be taken to that? Is there a catharsis that the team can go through when they have that sort of opportunity to kind of air their grievances and then put it behind them and move forward as a group?
Yeah, I think so. And Paul Maurice said it quickly after the game in Minnesota that there would be more concern if there wasn't concern from those that are inside that dressing room at this time of the year with how some of the games are being played out right now. So I think it was a real galvanizing moment once again for this team. And let's also not forget that these things happen more than people in the outside world think. There's confrontation within a group of hockey players multiple times during a season. That's the game. You know, that's one of the things that I think makes our sport so unique is, you know, guys will get in an argument at practice and there might be a couple punches thrown, and then 90 minutes later they're having lunch at a restaurant somewhere. That's just hockey. Now, I understand that the whole 22, 23 minute thing after the game was unique based on where the schedule is and kind of how that game played out. And, you know, they didn't play that bad. Eric Comrie had two horrific bounces go against him that you couldn't draw up another 1,000 times if you tried. And then, obviously, the third goal was, you know, one that he would have loved to have back. And when you got into that 3-0 deficit there, then, you know, they just weren't able to make any kind of a comeback. And we saw the Jacob Trouba shorthanded goal. That was kind of the bright spot of the night for that game. But after that, when the team comes together, I think it was a very positive thing. And you know, the rest of the road trip, I think, has been very positive for this team as well. You look at the way they played against Colorado. Yeah, they had a 2-0 lead, but the Avalanche were literally fighting for their playoff lives. And they clinched getting the single point. They wanted to push that to overtime. The extra point after that was kind of mute at that point. And then here over the last couple of days, they've had, pretty good, productive off-ice gatherings. I've seen the guys wandering all over the resort that we're at here right now, and everybody seems to be in a positive mindset right now. There's different guys hanging out with different guys, going for dinner, and some guys played golf yesterday. Other guys were just hanging out, as a team, wandering around the shopping areas. So I think this group is in a better place mentally than maybe the outside world thinks they are. But as we all know, you get to game time tonight here against the Coyotes, and then that's when, the telltale signs of the hockey game itself really start to show again.
We're joined by Winnipeg Jets broadcaster Brian Munns on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. It's a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Coyotes, 9 o'clock puck drop. That's 7 o'clock Arizona time. And, Munzee, we wanted to talk to you about the forward line combinations, because we were talking about, those second and third lines last segment. And, you had Matty Perreault on the second line with Kevin Hayes and Nikolai Ehlers. And then Andrew Kopp was on that third line with Brian Little and Patrick Laine. And you mentioned earlier, Jets practice is in about 4 hours, but are you expecting similar line combinations, or do you think Paul Maurice is going to have the blender out again tonight?
That's the million-dollar question, right? I would think that they would try and do this sequence again, just based on the fact that they don't have Brandon Tanev eligible right now, so that pretty much leaves these players intact, with Matt Hendricks being really the only option they could decide to throw in, but I don't know if I see that happening, because Par Lindholm was pretty effective on that line with Adam Lowry and Jack Roslovic. So if Hendricks were to come in, then I would say Roslovic comes out, but I don't see that happening tonight. I would assume that we would see these same four sets of three forward lines. And right now, despite the fact that, they're pushing for home ice and they want to finish first, or they want to finish second, make sure that you don't have to go on the road for game one of the Stanley Cup playoffs opening up, which we believe will be on Wednesday, show us what you got. It really gives an opportunity for Matthew Perreault, Kevin Hayes, and Nikolai Ehlers to build some confidence, some chemistry, start to understand where everybody is, because we start going in the next game after this one here tonight, and one bounce could cost you a game in a best-of-seven series. And obviously, Andrew Kopp, for me, has been one of the most consistent Jets as of late, on that line with Brian Little back in the middle here and Patrick Laine. And obviously we'd like to see Patty score a little bit more than he has here lately. The rest of his game is continuing to grow, but I think 29 is more or less measured on how many goals he has, and he hasn't been able to light the lamp here lately. So you hope that, this team can just kind of build what they started to in the Avalanche game, despite the fact they only get 1 point inside the Pepsi Center, and have themselves a good feeling wrapping up the 82nd and final game. Because you take a look at the standings, and yeah, I understand the Jets are where they are right now, but they are where they are right now because they've got 46 wins. They set a franchise record for 21 road wins. Like, this team's done a lot of good things in the prior 81 games that are kind of being overlooked right now because of, some of the conflict that has faced them. So there's no perfect 82-game regular season schedule. You just hope that, with everything they've gone through over the last 10 days or so, that they can put some pieces, at the bottom step here again here tonight and continue to climb in the right mode to make sure their game is where they want it to be with Josh Morrissey in the lineup for game one of the playoffs.
Brian, a lot has been made, recently about the shot differential and the less amount of shots that the Jets have been able to tally against certain opponents. Is that something that they need to focus on in the postseason, or do you think they're comfortable playing that style of game, just allowing themselves to be outshot and allowing Connor Hellebuyck to just see the shots that they want him to see?
I think a lot of it has to do with some of those Eastern Conference teams that they played towards the end that will throw everything on goal. I think of the New York Islander game especially, and I know some of their coaching staff personally, and we've talked about it before the game, that, part of their game plan is they do throw everything on net and, try and create maybe a little bit more chaos than what we see that is played in a regular style here in the Western Conference. So, yeah, I would you know, there's never a game that you'd like to have 40 shots on your goaltender instead of 20. That's just silly. So I think all in all, yeah, they would like to play less in their own zone for sure, but I don't think they're that concerned with the actual number. And the other side of it too, guys, is you never can really 100% trust the guy that's shooting or knocking down the clock on the scoreboard. Sometimes there will be a puck rolling towards the net, and at the end of the period, Paulie and I will be doing the summary, and all of a sudden there's one or two more shots pop up there. So I think the team has a better read where their defensive game is right now than what some of the numbers say in the stats book that we get prior to game time. But again, if you can play less in your own zone, it's obviously more of a benefactor for you to have a little bit more success.
We're joined by Winnipeg Jets broadcaster Brian Munns on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You know, Brian, one positive I would think is the play of Connor Hellebuyck. What have you seen from the Jets' number one netminder, especially over the last, not just the last couple games, but just the last month or so?
I think he's trending in the right direction. He's played a lot of hockey, obviously, and he wants to play a lot of hockey. I think this was another good learning year for Connor Hellebuyck. He's got 62 under his belt, and obviously fully expect him to start in goal here tonight on a night that they can clinch first place with a little bit of help here. So you want to go with your best at the big time of the season. And I think Connor's done a good job of continuing, as he always says, to get his details right for the important time that gets to play next week when their first round playoff series begins against whoever it'll be. So all in all, I think there's a lot of positives right now for Connor Hellebuyck coming into the postseason. He's got the good workload. He's also been able to manage his rest, which I think has been one of the probably biggest things that I've seen him pay more attention to over the last couple of years here now, that he learned last year going all the way to round three that it's taxing. And not only in the games, but off the ice. Once the playoffs begin, you guys know what it's like. You're around the rink. There's additional media requests and there's more outside distraction. Everybody wants a piece of you. You've got people coming out of the woodwork that want to come to games now that you haven't talked to in years. So all in all, there's more for these guys to deal with, and obviously the goaltender more than anybody, that you know, he continues to develop his game both on and off the ice. So I have full confidence. I take a look at these goaltenders right now that are here in the Central Division, and I put Connor Hellebuyck right up there on that list with all those guys, which is a positive for Jets Nation for sure.
Munzee, last question for you here, and again, we appreciate you waking up with us early here. Regardless of what happens in the game this afternoon between the Canucks and the Blues, and regardless of what happens in that game between the Predators and the Hawks, so basically whether or not the Jets are playing for something, because of course if the Predators win their game, the Jets can't catch them. But what are you looking for in this Jets team? Not just a win or a loss, because we know that you want the Jets to win the game, especially, you know, if they still have a chance at finishing first in the Central Division. But is it just putting together a full 60-minute effort and playing the way that you know this team can play when they're successful?
Yeah, I think it is. I think you're bang on. And we kind of talked about it earlier when you guys brought up, you know, the shot number against. Let's start right there, because if you can clean up things a little bit around your own net, it makes it easier for everybody involved defensively. It takes a little bit of pressure off those guys. So, yeah, you know what? Pay attention to the defensive side of the game. The one thing you've got to remember in especially tonight's game now and a few of the other teams that they've played recently that might be outside of the playoff picture looking in, those guys have nothing to play for. They're playing for points. They're playing for health, making sure they don't get hurt going into their last game of the season and knowing that they've got 4 or 5 months here now that you don't want to have to do rehab. So the Coyotes are probably going to bring a little bit more of a looser game than what the Winnipeg Jets would like, just because of where their mental mindset is coming into this one here tonight. They don't have to lock it down. They don't have to bore it down and try and grind out a point. So I think for Winnipeg here tonight is they need to be careful of the game that the Coyotes will try and present. Now, in saying that, the Jets will tell you they want to dictate their own game and try and tell what the flow is going to be like. So I think all in all tonight, if the Jets come in and play the game in and around Connor Hellebuyck, they can transition that to the neutral zone and then, you know, get some good quality scoring chances on, we believe, Calvin Pickard to get the start and goal tonight for the Coyotes, that, you know, it would be the right mindset going into the playoffs, wrapping up their 82nd and final game. And at the end of the night, you always want to win. So if they could fly home tomorrow with 47 wins and 98 points, that's a pretty good run for them here in a very tough and challenging Central Division that they live in.
The Jets and Coyotes meet tonight, 9 o'clock Central Time, but you'll hear Munsey alongside Dennis Bayak and Paul Edmonds before that on the Manitoba Building Trades Winnipeg Jets pregame show. Munsey, thanks again for so much for joining us a little bit early. Of course, it's a couple of hours earlier behind us there in Arizona, so have a good call tonight, and we'll see you back in Winnipeg pretty soon.
Sounds good, guys. Looking forward to the last game here tonight. Obviously, we remember everybody today. It's April 6th. With the Humboldt Broncos, and we'll look forward to the whiteout and everything that gets going next week in Winnipeg. Next week's a great time of the year, isn't it?
Absolutely. Talk to you soon, Munsey.
You bet. Take care, guys.
All right, let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Jets versus Coyotes tonight. We're going to continue the preview. The Coyotes have been knocked out of the playoffs, but obviously this has the potential to be a huge game for the Jets with first place in the Central on the line. Potentially. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Body's flying.
And now behind the net again, Zucker to the front, Hunt.
Oh!
What a stop!
And Kemper, no big deal. I'll take that. Watch this. Watch the glove.
Oh, the windmill.
Look at the time and space for Hunt. Oh. This puck right now looking like a beach ball.
Darcy Kemper, 22 straight starts for the Arizona Coyotes. He's had a fantastic season. The Arizona Coyotes defeated the Vegas Golden Knights on Thursday night, but were officially eliminated from the playoffs after the Colorado Avalanche picked up that point against the Jets, and then they obviously picked up the extra point, Eric Johnson scoring the overtime winner. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve and home of, in my opinion, the best sandwich in the city, the Illegal Curve sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family-owned and operated and has been serving quality homemade food since 1985. For a hot breakfast starting at 6:30 weekdays and all day long, pay us a visit at 1700 Cordon in the Cordon Village Mall. Visit Bernstein's online at bernsteinsdeli.com. Dave, we're going to continue talking about the Jets and Coyotes game because obviously that's a huge game. First place in the Central Division, possibly on the line. If the Nashville Predators win, and we won't know before the game if they've won because the game will still be in action.
Right.
But
third period,
it'll be the third period. So there is a chance that the Predators are up a couple of goals, and maybe it's going to look like the Predators have first place locked up. But regardless, when the game starts, we're not going to know for sure if the Predators have officially won that game. But when you're talking about this Jets-Coyotes game, first off, I want to talk about something that I wanted to bring up earlier in the show before we had Munsey on, but it's the lack of Jets goal scoring. And it's been well documented that Patrick Laine has not been putting the puck in the net. And, you know, Mark Scheifele, after he went through a bit of a drought, he's starting to put the puck in the net. Nikolaj Ehlers scored his 20th goal of the game. We talked about it on that nice feed from Matty Perreault. He had gone 7 games without a goal prior to Thursday night. But I want to go back to the last 6 games because the Jets have scored 2 or less goals in 4 of the last 6 games. And again, I don't want to be negative Nelly here, but there's no doubt that the Jets are struggling to put the puck in the net. The exceptions were Monday against Chicago when the Jets scored four goals in that 4-3 overtime win, and the game against the Islanders, which they lost 5-4. But if you go back all the way to the home game against Dallas, 2 goals. Mentioned the Islanders game, 4 goals. Against Montreal, that was last weekend, 1 goal. Chicago, 4 goals. We talked about that. Against Minnesota, they only scored 1, and against Colorado, 2. So you're talking about 14 goals in 6 games. That's just over 2 goals a game that the Jets are averaging over the last 6 goals. So my question to you, Dave, is how important tonight against the Coyotes is it for the Jets to score some goals? Not just 1 or 2, but preferably you'd like to put 4 or 5 past Darcy Kemper, something that's not very easy to do. But how concerned are you about the lack of goal scoring? Because I think you'd agree that, Mark Scheifele, Nikolaj Ehlers, Kyle Connor, those guys have been producing. But when you go a little bit farther down the lineup, there's a lot of guys that aren't putting the puck in the net, namely Patrick Laine, Brian Little, those secondary scorers, I guess, at this point, even though you're used to Laine being one of your primary scorers. I mean, how concerned are you about that when you talk about, them facing good defensive teams? Because whether you face Dallas, whether you face Nashville or St. Louis, I mean, St. Louis, guys, has the best record in the NHL since January 1st.
Mm-hmm.
They're a good defensive team. Dallas is a very good defensive team. I think they're third in the NHL in goals against, second or third in the NHL goals against. I know the Islanders are still first in the NHL when you talk about goals against. So how big of a concern is that?
Oh, there's no question about it. I think, though, the interesting thing from my perspective, Ezzy, is almost the is the defensive side of things though, with Winnipeg. I think goal scoring, because as we know in the playoffs especially, it goes down. So there's no question, you're 100% right. You absolutely need secondary scoring because you need guys like Laine to contribute. You need guys like Brian Little. You need guys up and down the lineup to be able to put that puck into the back of the net. But I think from a tightening the defensive standpoint, that I think is what's critical. I mean, this is a Jets team that's given up, you know, a fair number of goals. I think that their goals against is 242. And that's significantly more. Nashville's 212. St. Louis is 221. As you just touched on, Ezzy, Dallas is 202. The only other team that's pretty leaky like the Jets in that regard is the Colorado Avalanche at 241. So that to me is the area, because I think when you're looking at a big picture, there's no question in my mind that you can't just rely on, you can't be a one trick pony. You can't just have Mark Scheifele scoring goals or Kyle Connor scoring goals and then somehow, you know, use that and that have that be sufficient to get you into the second round and into the third round and hopefully for the Jets, from their perspective, into the Stanley Cup Finals. So you're not going to do that with only one or two guys scoring. So 100% you're right. Right across the board, you need this team to be scoring. But from my perspective, I just think defensively, this team needs to tighten the ship, because we talked about allowing a lot of shots, and you can allow a lot of shots if they're from the outside, they're not high danger chances. That's okay. But at the same time, it means you don't have the puck. It means you're not playing with the puck. I just think defensively, this is a Jets team that needs to really tighten it up. Now, it's not going to be easy. Again, getting Josh Morrissey back, that's good. Having Dustin Byfuglien back, because again, we saw what's happened to the Jets since no Josh Morrissey. So I think they just need to tighten things up defensively.
I want to get Shawny Assor in here, even though I don't know if he necessarily wants to come on, but we only have about 2 or 3 minutes here. We're going to bring in Catherine Silverman of The Athletic, who covers the Arizona Coyotes. But Shawny, how important is it to see Dustin Byfuglien on the top power play unit? I'm not just talking about tonight versus the Coyotes. I'm talking about once the first round of the playoffs starts, regardless of who the Jets play, obviously, because we don't know if it's going to be the Blues or the Predators or the Stars. But you look at the Jets, they have not scored a power play goal in their last three games. They went 0-4 against the Chicago Blackhawks. They went 0-4 against the Minnesota Wild, and they didn't score any goals against the Colorado Avalanche, even though they only had a couple of power play opportunities. So how important is it for Paul Maurice to put Buff on that top unit? Because as it stands now, I'm not putting this all on Jacob Trouba, but right now that power play is stale for the Jets.
Oh, it's as stale can be, and I think it's very important, both for the team's perspective and if you watch Dustin Byfuglien, his perspective as well, because obviously he wants to get back on that top power play. His stick will also agree with you on that in that regard. But, I mean, there's just little things that he does, with no respect to disrespect to Jacob Trouba, there's things he does much better. He's much better at the one-timer pass to Patrick Laine. Mm-hmm. He's much better at holding the line and making quick moves on the blue line to allow the puck to stay alive in the offensive zone. I mean, there's just little things that people can't do what Dustin Byfuglien can do. So I think if he sits out 2 minutes for an entire power play, the Jets' power play suffers. And I think it is important to get him back on that top unit.
The Jets, I mentioned a couple. It was actually the Jets had 3 power play opportunities against the Colorado Avalanche. But Dustin Byfuglien only had 36 seconds of power play time. 36 seconds. That's truly unbelievable. Jacob Trouba, 5 minutes and 22 seconds. 5 minutes and 22 mm-hmm. seconds versus 36 seconds. Now, again, I'm not the coach. I'm just a really good-looking guy who does the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. But to me, you got to have Buff out there more. I mean, Buff has been out there on the Jets power play running that thing for years. And again, I think Jacob Trouba is having his best year. I mean, it's certainly a career year offensively.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think I'm not even saying, you know, that Trouba can't be on the number one power play unit. I guess that's what I am saying. No, I do think Buff should be on the first power play unit, but when you're talking about those minutes, you got to get him out there more.
Well, no, and I think Sean hit it on the head. I mean, if you want to get, it's not just about getting Dustin Byfuglien going, getting that power play. It's getting guys like Patrick Laine feeling good about their game. And I think to Sean's point, and that to me is what really jumps out, is that Jacob Trouba just doesn't have that split second decision making that Dustin Byfuglien does. Jacob Trouba is a little more cerebral, a little more of a thinker. So you can see it in his gameplay, and it's a little bit of a delay, and that delay allows the defense to set, and it just makes that pass a little less crispy and a little less significant, because it gives the defense an opportunity to see that he's making that pass. It allows them to shift into prevent mode for a Patrick Laine shot or something else. And I think Dustin Byfuglien, you don't see that. With him, it's a little more chaotic, But I think that's a good thing for the power play.
Dave M., we're up against the break, so we're going to pay some bills. And then when we come back, we're going to be joined by Kat Silverman. She covers the Coyotes for The Athletic. She also writes for In Goal Magazine. She has a wealth of knowledge about goaltenders as well. So you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Kat Silverman of The Athletic. It's a Winnipeg Jets game day, a Santa Lucia game day on the home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Second hour of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk, Sean Assor. This segment of the show is brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center and Dr. Les Rikus. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the whole family. To make an appointment today, visit lindenmarketdental.com. Let's hit the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
She writes for The Athletic and In Goal Magazine. Catherine Silverman, thanks so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Big game tonight between the Jets and the Coyotes. Unfortunately, the Coyotes learned that they were going to be eliminated from the playoffs after the Colorado Avalanche picked up a point against the Jets. Catherine, we want to start off talking to you about the season as a whole for the Coyotes, because I think you'd agree that, you know, the Coyotes much improved this year from last year. When you look at the season as a whole, are there not so many different signs that this team is heading in the right direction, especially when you consider all of the injuries that this Coyotes team has faced, whether that's going to be, you know, with goaltender Antti Raanta or Nick Schmaltz, Michael Grabner, Christian Dvorak. I mean, this Coyotes team has lost, you know, way more than 200 plus games due to injury. So even though the Coyotes didn't make the playoffs, sorry, I guess in a really long roundabout way, has this not been a successful season, as successful as you can get without making the playoffs?
Absolutely. I mean, when you mentioned the injuries, and I know that right around the time that the Coyotes played Winnipeg, they were starting to get healthy again when the Jets came down for the Shane Doan retirement game. And they had just called up a few more players, and they'd called up Kyle Capobianco, and he was supposed to, you know, join the blue line, solidify it a little bit more. And he ended up with a season-ending injury as well. And that just sort of sums the season up as a whole, that, you know, any guy they called up, any guy they traded for, Nick Schmaltz is out for the season. It's like they arrived in Arizona and were immediately hurt. And so we were coming into the season, it seemed like not making the playoffs was going to be a failure. You know, they really needed to take that step forward. But then seeing the injuries that they had, really just staying alive and not plummeting down the standings as they lost all these guys. You know, for a while they were playing with a center depth of like Nick Cousins, Mario Kempe, Vinny Hinostroza, who said that he hadn't been a center since he was like 13 years old. And then I think they had Derek Stepp on there for a little bit before he got injured as well. Just the fact that they managed to keep winning looked like a success. And the fact that they took it, like you said, to, I believe it was the last minute of the second period in their game against Vegas. That was game 81 for them. That's when they realized that they were out of the playoffs officially, and taking it to the 81st game halfway through is something that, given their injuries, really was just a huge success. So.
And Kat, I was looking for this stat as I was, you know, talking to you and setting up the interview, but the Coyotes have actually won 10 more games than they did last year. But this is the stat to me that's the most impressive, and this is from The Athletic. The Coyotes have gone 22-13-5 since January 8th, which is the eighth best mark in the NHL, 10-2-1 in their last 13 home games. And maybe the most impressive to me is that the Coyotes rank fifth in the NHL defensively.
Yeah, that's I know that when they brought in Rick Tocchet, you know, they lost Dave Tippett. He'd been their long-term coach. He'd always been thought of as this huge defensive presence for the team. He always preached this defense-first style of play. And the way that Tocchet plays is a massive overhaul on the system that that Tippett played. But the new system seems to be working more effectively defensively. And so even though they're not the same defensive team that they were, they remain a budget team. That's no secret to anyone. You know, they need to cut corners. They need to be bargain savvy. And for the team, that means preventing the goals so that the guys who they do have and that they can afford are able to score the number of goals that they're really able to. And that's really how they've approached this season. And And it's worked. Like you said, they're one of the best defensive teams in the league this year, and it's shown in the way that they play, too. It's not, that's not an accident. I think that's going to continue moving forward as well.
Well, Kat, to be a good defensive team, you need a goaltender, and Darcy Kuemper's sure proven to be that, starting 22 straight games for the Coyotes. And just how impressive has he been overall, and just how much did his teammates appreciate, considering he sustained that eye injury against the Kings and then still managed to play in that game against Vegas with all the importance it had for this team?
This team is, I mean, this team has lived and died by Darcy Kuemper this year. And that's, at the beginning of the year, if somebody had told me that, I probably would have laughed at you. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've seen him. He played in Minnesota. He played in L.A. He did all right in L.A. He never really had the consistency in Minnesota. He was up and down between the AHL and the NHL. I really didn't think that he had number one caliber talent. He didn't seem to have the consistency. He didn't seem to have the fortitude. He didn't have the technical precision. And right around early January, he told the coaching staff, you know, he pulled Rick Tocchet, he pulled their goaltending coach Corey Schwab into a room and said, I'm not happy with how my game has been. I want to fix it. I need to help this team win. How do I get there? And he worked with Schwab, and he, you know, was able to sort of cater his practices to improving his game and tightening it back up. And that's not something that you necessarily see from a lot of goaltenders in the NHL that have the awareness of, you know, I'm doing something differently from these guys who are succeeding and I need to fix that. And then being able to fix it during the season while playing every other day. And so I don't think it's possible to really explain just how much credit he deserves this year. He's been the heartbeat of the team. He's been the backbone. He's been not just lucky, he's been doing it through legitimate talent. I think he's looking sustainably good, and that's been the most impressive thing to me.
And Kat, just sticking with Kuemper, after they acquired Kuemper, the Coyotes, of course, acquired Kuemper from the LA Kings, GM John Chyka signed Kuemper to that two-year contract. So he's under contract for one more year at $1.8 million a year. Is that not looking like, you know, one of the most savvy signings of the last year, getting Kuemper for under $2 million a year?
I would say so. It's every time John Chyka signs one of those deals, it seems like at the time I thought it was maybe going to be a little bit of an overpay. Like I said, he hadn't really shown himself consistently in the past. He hadn't played more than, I think, 29 games before this year for any one team. And just something that they saw, they believed that he could do it. Maybe they spoke to him. Maybe they understood that he was able to tighten up his game like that. I don't know what it was, but they thought it was worth the gamble, essentially, to pay him legitimate NHL backup money. And at this point, it's very clearly paying off for them. I know that they have an almost overcrowded pipeline behind him. They have Aiden Hill, Hunter Miska, Merrick Madsen, now Eric Hallgren as well. But they can afford to leave those guys in the AHL. They can afford to develop them more. And that's something that we've seen from far too many teams in the last few years. They don't have that. And I think that makes them incredibly lucky right now.
You know, Kat, we talked about the goaltending. We talked about the impressive defense. But you look at the forward groups and the goal scoring, and it's Alex Galchenyuk and Brad Richardson with 18 goals each to lead the team. How much of a priority is an increase in goal scoring for next season?
I think it's considered, when they head into free agency, at least, their top priority. I don't think that they're going to overpay for adding scoring, because after those two, they do have a wealth of guys who have in that 12 to 15 goal range. So they have, it's like they have four lines of comfortably good middle six forwards, which is better than having, you know, three lines of bottom line players, but it's not where they'd like to be. And so I know that they are specifically looking to address that. I think that they're hoping that Nick Schmaltz, when he comes back, will be able to ignite that a little bit. Clayton Keller had some troubles this year. I think that they're expecting that the way that he played with Nick Schmaltz when Schmaltz was healthy will be something that they'll continue to see. I know that he, some of his best production was when they traded for Schmaltz. So I think that they're anticipating that again. But yeah, I think they're looking to add a little bit there. When you have two 18-goal scorers as your leading scorers on the team in a league where some guys have, you know, 340-goal scorers on the same roster, there's definitely something that needs to be addressed.
We're joined by Kat Silverman, who covers the Coyotes for The Athletic, and she also writes for In Goal Magazine. And, you know, Kat, just continuing with Nick Schmaltz, you mentioned he's been out of the lineup since late December with that knee injury, and your colleague Craig Morgan reported the signing by the Coyotes. That was about a couple of weeks ago. That was in late March, the Coyotes signing Schmaltz to that 7-year contract. Were you surprised at all that the Coyotes signed him? It was just for, I believe, under $6 million a year, $5.85 million a year per season for Nick Schmaltz. Were you surprised that they signed him, considering that he's been out since late December? Or are you not surprised because, as you mentioned, he was so productive for the Coyotes after he came over from Chicago?
Well, he needed a new deal, so I knew that they were going to have to get something done at some point. I assumed that it might have been a bridge deal just because they haven't seen a huge substantial body of work at this point. But I do know that, like I said, this is a team that does need to cut salary where they can. And I was a little surprised by the term. 7 years is obviously not a short deal there, but if he continues to play the way that he did before he got injured, he had something like 14 points in 17 games. He had, I believe, 21 goals last year with the Chicago Blackhawks. If he continues to play like that kind of a player in the 20 to 30 goal range, the 50 to 60 point range, is a quality top line center that can help guys like Clayton Keller find their game. He can help organize the power play it was a very key issue for the Coyotes this year when he wasn't in the lineup. So if he can continue to do those things, getting him for under $6 million, essentially through his most productive years, is a huge steal for the team. So I think it's a calculated risk. I don't think it's necessarily a bad contract. It was a little surprising term-wise, but that's really the only part of it for me that was surprising. I think that the term, like the money, the finances of it, look about on par with how he's performed so far. And if he takes a step forward, it's obviously going to look like a bargain.
You know, Kat, the NHL seems loath to hand the Jack Adams Award for Coach of the Year to a coach that doesn't make the playoffs or doesn't get his team into the playoffs. But, I mean, I would think that there's a fairly good argument to be made for Rick Tocchet earning himself that award based on what he's been able to do with the team. Is there any sentiment within Arizona that he is in the running for that?
Absolutely. He's kind of one of those guys who I think that this may not be the year that he wins it, because like you said, a lot of people are hesitant to give the award to someone who can't get the team actually into the playoffs. And this team did stumble a little bit down the backstretch. They went on a very crucial Eastern Conference road trip towards the middle to end of March, and they dropped all the games. I think they only got 1 point out of a potential 8. That's the difference between making the playoffs and missing it. So that may be what edges him out, but I do think he's going to be a finalist, and that's something that in Arizona and just in hearing from the media around the league, as the Coyotes have picked up steam and as they've stayed in playoff contention until that second to last game, it's really been talked about quite a bit. And so I think that at the very least, he's going to be getting a substantial number of votes. He may not be the top vote getter, but I think he's going to be on up there.
You know, Kat, you think the Coyotes are looking to exact a little revenge tonight against the Jets after they allowed the Avalanche to crawl back into that game, earn the point, eliminate Arizona from the playoffs, and now here we are, the Jets fighting for top spot in the Central tonight, and the Coyotes can kind of, you know, flip the switch and exact a little revenge for Thursday's madness?
No, I think it's possible. They, the Coyotes and the Jets are a team that, I know that there's a lot of talk about how that's a forced rivalry. You know, it's, oh, this is the former Jets and the new Jets, and you guys are just forcing them together. But when they come together and play against each other, that's always a really fun game to watch. And sometimes it's hard hitting, and the Coyotes play a little heavier than they normally do, and they play to the style of the Jets. And it'd be a pretty entertaining game anyway. And so I would guess that, you know, these players have been scoreboard watching at least a little bit. They all admitted that coming into this final week, they were keeping an eye, you know, to see where they stood in the playoffs. My guess is they know exactly what happened, and they might lay their hits a little harder. They might take a few more shots just to show that they know what happened. But I don't think they'll do anything too egregious, but I do think it'll be a fun game to watch for sure.
The Jets and Coyotes meet tonight, 9:00 Central Time at Gila River Arena. And as Catherine Silverman just mentioned, the Coyotes are going to be looking to play the role of spoiler against the Winnipeg Jets, who are still looking to finish first in the Central Division. Kat, thanks so much for joining us this morning, and enjoy the game tonight, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right. Take care. We're going to head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk, switch our focus, and we're going to talk about the Carolina Hurricanes, who clinched their first playoff spot in 10 years. That's right. The first time since 2009 that the Hurricanes have surged their way into the playoffs. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's a Winnipeg Jets game day on the home of the Jets and the Moose, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
3 seconds left. The wait is over. Wow.
You boys want to start hugging a little bit? Celebrating?
Surging.
The Carolina Hurricanes going back to the playoffs for the first time since 2009. Did you see the highlights in the crowd? The Hurricanes fans hugging, and I imagine some of them were kissing, the ones that are romantically involved.
Sure. Maybe.
But seriously, though, I mean, I want to celebrate this because I didn't have the Hurricanes making the playoffs at the beginning of the year, but it almost seemed like, guys, at some point in the second half of the season, I don't know when exactly that was, maybe around the All-Star break, it almost looked like the Hurricanes were not going to be denied and they were going to finally go back to the playoffs for the first time, as we mentioned, since 2009. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk, and Sean Assor. Drew Mandel is MIA. Just kidding. He's on vacation, but he'll be back next week. He will be back for the NHL playoff preview show on Tuesday night from 7 to 10 here on TSN 1290. We're going to be joined by our good friends Eric Duhacek and Kevin Allen, who join us every year for our playoff preview show. And we have to talk about this Hurricanes team, guys, because we haven't talked about this Hurricanes team a lot. We've talked about the Hurricanes when the Jets faced them. And, you know, we've talked about them in terms of the storm surge and all that. But when you talk about this Hurricanes team, they're in a wild card spot right now. They're in the first wild card spot. Mm-hmm. What do they have, Dave? 98 points?
97.
97 points. The Pittsburgh Penguins are sitting at 99 points. The Penguins have clinched. I mean, all teams have clinched now.
Right. Yep.
But the Penguins have 99 points, but the Hurricanes can actually catch the Penguins because they have the tiebreaker. They have more regulation wins at 43.
Mm-hmm.
They play the Philadelphia Flyers today.
Mm-hmm.
The Pittsburgh Penguins host the New York Rangers. So in theory, the Hurricanes can move up to third. Mm-hmm. The Penguins could fall out of third and go down to a wild card spot. That is obviously if they don't win. If the Penguins get a point, I mean, they finish third. They can't finish any higher because, well, actually, can they?
I think
they actually can still finish second.
They
in
can
the
technically
Metro Division.
Still finish second if they beat the Rangers, they'd have 101.
And then, right,
and then the Islanders. If the Islanders lose,
right,
then the Penguins would have 43 row, okay, and the Islanders have 42.
So what's happening in the Metro Division is similar to kind of what's happening in the Central Division, mm-hmm, because the Washington Capitals have the Metro Division locked up. They have 104 points, so the Islanders obviously can't pick up any more points to tie them. So when you're talking about Pittsburgh, they could fall out, as we mentioned, into a wild card spot, but they could also finish second. But the point is, the Carolina Hurricanes right now would play the Washington Capitals in the first round, unless, as we talked about, they move up into third, and then they could play the New York Islanders. So the question that I have for you guys, and I guess there always is the chance, there's so many different combinations here. In theory, Carolina could actually fall into the second wild card
spot.
Because
Columbus could still get into that first one.
So crazy. I guess what we have to talk about is, if you're the Hurricanes and Rod Brind'Amour, who do you want to face more? You obviously don't want to face the Lightning, but would you rather face the Washington Capitals or would you rather face the New York Islanders? Because as it stands now, there's a better chance that's going to happen unless they don't pick up any points and Columbus wins and then they face the Tampa Bay Lightning in the first round. So I guess, you know, in a roundabout way, depending on who this team faces, can the Carolina Hurricanes actually win around here?
Well, I mean, I think so. I think that it's always a possibility. I think if the Carolina Hurricanes play the New York Islanders, I'm not saying the New York Islanders look very defensively sound hockey team, but I think that they're vulnerable. I think that they've got vulnerabilities. They're not infallible. I think probably the only team that's at that point is the Tampa Bay Lightning. And even they have, you know, some have had a couple of hiccups here towards the end of the season, but I think that Carolina can push it. I don't know that they're necessarily going to beat a Washington Capitals team, a Tampa Bay. I don't think they'd beat a Tampa Bay Lightning team. I'm not saying it's impossible. I just think that, you know, if you're Carolina and you've had this magical season and everybody is behind you in the sense that you've got such a great fan support for what you were able to do with the surge and you've got a, you know, a pretty young team over there, and you've got a lot of guys. And we talked about it, I think, at the beginning of the season about how this Carolina team needed to get into the playoffs simply because that was their expectation over the last couple of years as they built a younger team. They've added some veterans, but they really have that young core that they want to kind of get together and like really kind of they're growing them as a group. So I think from that perspective, you look at it and you think to yourself, okay, well, what's the next step? Now, we know teams don't generally just come into their first kind of Stanley Cup playoffs in years. I mean, we saw it with the Jets when they faced the Ducks and they got eliminated in four games. But, you know, it's that experience. How valuable is that experience to get to their game, that next level? Obviously, these guys want to win the Stanley Cup. I'm not saying otherwise. But, I mean, in terms of what's realistic for Carolina, I think it's you go into that first round, you make some noise, maybe you challenge a Washington, take them to six games, you know, or potentially, you know, take an Islanders to seven. I mean, and if you get it to seven games, guess what? Either team can win in seven games. So to me, I think from Carolina's perspective, I think the entire season has been successful, but I think it would have been a little bit hollow had you fallen out of that playoff spot. In Montreal, for example, would have leapfrogged you or the Columbus and Montreal, whatever. I think in that instance, then it'd be a little bit of a hollow season. But this way, at least now, they've got a lot to build on, and they'll be able to use this experience in the playoffs. You know, they're wearing the black jerseys, their third jerseys, which is an interesting choice for them. So they're going with that option. But, yeah, so we'll see. But I think it's just it's such a fun story for what they've been able to do in Carolina, considering that they've had that expectation and they finally put it all together.
Yeah, and you talk about, you know, just expectations in general. And inside the room, listen to what Justin Falk's saying. We just don't want to get in. We got other business to take care of now. So this is a guy who's going into his first postseason in the NHL, and he doesn't want to just get in. He wants to do some damage. Also, interesting to note, the last time the Hurricanes made the playoffs, Rob Brind'Amour was a player. He returns as a head coach. They're back.
Rod the Bod. And Shawnee, you know, you make a good point because I don't think the Hurricanes, I mean, they're not going to be just happy to get there. I don't think anybody is picking the Hurricanes to win the Stanley Cup. But the Hurricanes are now there, and we know how hard it is just to get into the playoffs. Nobody knows better than Justin Falk. I mean, this is his eighth season. He's played over 500 games with the Hurricanes franchise. This is his first sniff of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And I think everybody knows that this Carolina Hurricanes team doesn't score a lot of goals. Aside from the New York Islanders, they've scored the fewest amount of goals of any of the teams that made the playoffs in the Eastern Conference. I mean, after Sebastian Aho, after Teuvo Teravainen, there's a big drop-off, right? Justin Williams, Michael Furland, those are your secondary scorers. Dougie Hamilton has put up some nice numbers from the back end, but the Hurricanes' strength is in net, and Peter Mrazek has had a very underrated season. Curtis McElhinney is also having a good year, but Peter Mrazek has taken over as the starter there, and he's just been fantastic for them, and it's a very underrated defensive team. They don't give up a lot of goals. In fact, the Hurricanes have given up one less goal than the Tampa Bay Lightning this year. So, I mean, when you're talking about the Hurricanes, I mean, you know, we know how good Jacob Slavin is, Brett Pesce, Justin Falk, you know, even though, you know, he's more known as an offensive defenseman, you know, Dougie Hamilton has certainly had a better second half to the season. So, I mean, this Hurricanes team is not an easy team to play against. They don't give up a lot of goals. We talked about it. They've given up less goals than the first place President's Trophy winning Tampa Bay Lightning. So, even though, you know, depending on the matchup, I'm probably not going to take the Hurricanes, I could see them giving whoever they play in the first round a run for their money. Let's head to break, boys. When we come back, we're going to be joined by our very good friend Michael Trakos of Post Media. You're listening to the Winnipeg Jets game day, Santa Lucia Pizza game day, on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.